Hey, fellow NDE fans, we have some exciting things coming up on the other side, but we could really use your help and support to keep going with this channel. Our outreach team works around the clock, making sure to bring you the best NDE stories that we can find. But now we're looking to expand into other countries to get near-death experiences from around the globe. However, we need your help and support to make this happen. This is why we're introducing our YouTube membership program. Get access to exclusive, ad-free episodes that haven't been on YouTube. Watch and participate in live Q&As with the guests. Engage directly with us and NDEers. Participate in giveaways and live events. And most importantly, you will ensure our channel's continuous efforts to seek out and uncover these important experiences worldwide. Support us by hitting the Join Now button below. Thank you for your continued viewership and support. Your help will make a difference, and we look forward to building our community together with you.
My name is Jay. I live in Columbus, Ohio. Originally from south side of Chicago, and I had a near-death experience, also known as a full-death experience. My story starts on the south side of Chicago. I was born and raised on the south side of Chicago, and we lived in the Inglewood district of Chicago, a pretty rough side of the city. I've experienced a lot of, I want to say, roller coaster of emotions and events during my childhood. All which gave me the strength to survive and make it up to this moment. My father, he was a family man, but he, for the most part, he did sell drugs. He was in a gang along with most of my family. And I didn't know what he was doing at the time because I was still a young one, but I do remember some of the things that stuck with me to this day, like the drug deals, the shootouts, the fights, the times where we didn't want for anything. You know, we were treated like, I want to say, almost like ghetto royalty, so to speak, in our neighborhood. But where we lived, my grandmother and my grandfather did not really agree with it or whatnot. And we found our house being raided pretty often, you know, I would say like every other weekend, it seemed like. And we were children and we didn't really know what was going on. We started a little bit, but for the most part, we were always had to go to the back room to sit it out and wait for the police to leave and then come out. The house is a mess and everything. And even though some may say that this fear is traumatizing, this fear is also, I want to say, useful as you get older for some. For us, it was. Nevertheless, my mom, she didn't want us to keep us in that environment, so she's about to move us to the projects of Chicago. And anyone who heard or know the projects in Chicago, it can be pretty rough, especially back in the 80s. But my grandmother, my mom's mom, she didn't want us to go into that environment. So she bought a home about 4 or 5 blocks away from where we were to get us out of that area. It may sound funny, like 4 or 5 blocks is not that far, but it was far enough to not put us in that environment. While there, I had to meet new people. I had to adjust to a new life, spend time with my mom's side of the family. Also experienced things that were a little different from, he was only a few blocks away, but it was a little different, but yet challenging. We saw, again, fights, shootouts again. I was bullied in elementary school, all the way up until grade school. Then I met a group of friends that are still my friends to this day. We started dancing. We did shows, a bunch of concerts, some with like Ghetto Boys, Red Man, Method Man, DJ Quick, Usher. We were contestants at the Apollo Theater twice, one in my teenage years, probably like 15, and then the other one is 17. I said all those things to say that everything that I was experiencing growing up on the south side of Chicago, it gave me strength for the next thing that came my way. And it was always something that came my way, as it is with most people. So one of the things that came my way was, after performing and dancing and everything, I met the mother of my 4 children. And I want to say 96 or something like that. We got involved and everything, and we eventually got pregnant with my oldest daughter. And I worked, I always kept a job, worked to provide for my family, regardless of everything that was going on around me. I kept busy, you know? So by this time, we had like three children. One day I was walking, we were just sitting on the block, just hanging out and everything. And guys in the neighborhood were selling drugs, and we would chase them off because we had children running around. We would chase them off and everything. And the mother of my children, she wanted to move to Ohio. I didn't want to move because my family and friends was there. You know, I didn't know anything else, but her mom had just moved here. So I wasn't going to leave, but one day I found drugs on the side of my grandmother's house on the ground where kids were, while our children were playing. And I said, you know what, I'm up. So we left. Three children, hatchback Hyundai accent, got up here, and it was a totally different world for me. I didn't know anything other than the South Side of Chicago, but it started to get rough. I started to get homesick, and I did see a sudden change, not just in my environment, but in myself, in my relationship. It seemed as if it started to go south, regardless of anything I was trying to do. And we ended up staying with her mom or her parents, who at the time didn't really like me. So it was a lot of stress, you know, for me. And then coming somewhere that I didn't know of, I had to provide now for three children and a fiance. So I was uncomfortable being there. I didn't know what to do, just looking around, finding a job the best way I could. And that same year you had, what was it? The 9/11. 9/11 happened. It's pretty devastating to us, and as well as to the rest of the world. And even though it was shocking, it kind of was like a precursor to a change in the things of what my world would be like. One would say that it proved that my world was going to be a little more chaotic than I was used to. So we got our own place about a year later. And after we got our own place, that's when things started to kick in. We were having a disagreement, you know, that night, the beginning of the end for our relationship. We were having an agreement, and all of a sudden, my dad called and said that your grandmother is not, you know, not doing too well. I felt bad, you know. I thought maybe she would hang on a little bit, but later on that evening, he called me again and said she passed. So I didn't get time to grieve because I was still trying to figure out things here in Ohio. So we just went there, buried my grandmother, you know, became just like one of the backbones of the family, keep everybody together. And again, yet I didn't process the grief. I just knew life had to continue going on. So when we made it back here, we found out we were pregnant, which is now, he's now 20, my youngest son. And as time, I probably say a few months go by and we're pregnant, she was upset with me because I guess she felt that her being pregnant, her career was going to be her career or what she wanted to do kind of got sidetracked and it was my fault. We'll see how, but she was yelling at me, so to speak, and we was having our disagreement. And she took the ring off, put it on the table, said, engagement was over, and it was over. I was a little devastated, a little shocked. But then, probably about 10 minutes later, I got another call from Chicago. And this was, like I said, almost a year later. Another call from Chicago from my cousin telling me that my cousin Vail was dead. I didn't want to believe it. But my cousin Vail had just got killed on the front lawn of my grandmother's house, the grandmother who had just passed a year prior. I am feeling some kind of way. At the same time, I'm still kind of numb because of my grandmother passed the prior year. Now my relationship is over. Now my cousin passed. We went to go bury him, and I felt just as bad, if not worse, because right before I left there one time, I didn't see him. And I told him I'll see him the first time, the first person I see when I come back. And I never got a chance to see him as the first person when I come back. So that kind of hurt me. But we came back, and it seemed like when we got back, it just seemed like it didn't get better, you know? And again, as I told you before, everything that I experienced throughout my life were all strength builders for everything that came afterwards. So while we were getting adjusted and everything, still no room for grief, I had to hustle and bustle, get a gig, take care of my family and everything. I started back working for Coca-Cola because I worked for Coca-Cola, I want to say 3 years prior to us moving here. So I started working back for Coca-Cola, and I want to say in 2005, I went to go do a checkup. We had to do a checkup for a job. I went to do a checkup, and the doctor said that I had lupus. I wasn't really sure what lupus was, but they told me it can be fatal. But I didn't have time to put a lot of energy to it again because I was pumping, you know, still just going with the flow, like on autopilot. But I found I had lupus, just kept working. And then all of a sudden we had, a death in the family. Time went on. A couple years later, found out that I had severe depression and anxiety. And then fast forward, as we're going through all these issues with the mother of my children, we broke up by that time. I started having custodial issues, going back and forth to court, putting more pressure on me. And like I said, there was no room for grief because I was going through so much. I just had to keep it going for my kids. And it seemed like every year there was a death in the family. My great-grandmother, my great-uncle, my cousin, another cousin. It just felt like it wouldn't stop. You know, my uncle, it just felt like it wouldn't stop. And all I can do is just keep going, you know, all I can do is keep going and just make it through to take care of my kids. I eventually ran into a book called The Autobiography of a Yogi and started meditating because of this book. And it helped me keep calm and change my life for the better throughout the whole mess. But who knew that I would need that calm and that calmness and that patience about a couple year later. About 2013, I went to the doctor for a checkup and come to find out that I had a pulmonary embolism, a blood clot in my lung. Again, they said it's something that can be fatal, and I didn't think nothing of it. You know, just like the previous, you know, they said, take this medicine. If you don't, you could die. I said, okay. You know, so I just did what I was supposed to do, took the medicine. At the same time, I was into herbals and everything, so I would take that every now and then, and with my meditation, and those were the things that kept me going. And everything that happened gave me, like I said, all this strength for the biggest battle that I didn't see coming. After I got my diagnosis, I found myself sometimes getting sick at work and throughout my day. I was having anxiety attacks every day, sometimes like a couple times a day. I would do my checkups, you know, because of the lupus and the pulmonary embolism. And next thing you know, one pulmonary embolism turned to two pulmonary embolisms. And then in 2015, I'm doing what I usually do, work and everything. And all of a sudden, my little sister called me and told me that my uncle was dead. My uncle, I got killed. And the kicker was, yeah, I got killed by my little brother in my grandma's house in her kitchen. That hurt. It was more of a shocker. Went to his funeral, 2015 again. Went to his funeral. We buried him. Gave like a speech to the family to console the family and everything. And afterwards, just came home and dealt with my own medical situation. So late 2015, early 2016. I was going to the doctor for another checkup, and I was having chest pains, and they said that I had angina. Again, they just kept coming. It was like, what can you do but keep moving, you know? I had angina, which is, I guess, a weakness of the heart muscle. I brushed it off. Another thing, you know, just working 24 hours, sometimes overtime. It was just a lot just to take care of my family. I was stressing, missing meals. Sometimes I have like an apple, you know, a day because of my issues with the custodial things and then child support and all that. And this, it started, it really started wear and tear on my body, even though I didn't show it emotionally to people. One day I was coming in for work, the evening of August 18, 2016. I was having my chest felt funny. I couldn't really put my finger on it. It wasn't like it was any pain or anything, but it was the evening. But I just knew that I was just coming in, turning in, getting ready to go to bed, call my mom, my buddies, and everything. And the next thing you know, I wake up in the hospital about a week later. I had no idea what happened, but I know when I open my eyes, I look to my left. Not only do I see this radiant glow of light around my family, which I know to be love because of what I experienced. I'll tell you about that. The doctors and everybody's like, Jay, do you know where you are? Do you know why you're here? They said, you had a heart attack. We lost you. You died and you're back. We're glad to have you back. I didn't think anything of it, you know. I was just sitting there with tubes all connected to me, you know, in this hospital room with tubes all through me. I still got my trach mark and burn marks on my chest from the defibrillator. But as I regain consciousness, I see like my buddy and his wife and my kids, they're all at the end of my bed, you know, his wife holding my hand saying, if you recognize me, squeeze my hand. I squeezed her hand and I went back out. And the more I regain my consciousness, they start telling me what happened. They said that I drove myself to the hospital that evening, parked my car, walked through the emergency room doors. And as soon as I got into the hospital, I collapsed and went into cardiac arrest. I had to be resuscitated twice. They put a stent in my heart to stabilize me and then flew me to Riverside Hospital here in Columbus, which was a trauma hospital. They said, when I got there, my eyes would open and they said that I was fighting. So they just figured they'd fight with me. Nevertheless, I told it 2-3 more times. And the last time was it. I flatlined. Before I coded that last time, they called my mom and everybody in my family, which my kids were here with their mom. And then they called my mom in Chicago and family and said, someone need to get here. He's not looking good. You know, he need to have somebody here with him. Of course, they reacted as you would think they would react, you know, in panic. And they started to try to get together so they can come out to me. I would say it was like early morning of the 19th, probably, I think it was like 4 early morning. They said, we've been working on him for like a half an hour, you know, somebody need to come up here with him. So as they got ready and they started making their way up here, shortly after they called my mom back and said that they had lost me and there was nothing they can do, that I had died. So my mom didn't believe it, and they still proceeded to come up here. When they got up here, it was probably late afternoon, almost the evening. She got off the elevator, and when she got off the elevator, she was met by the mother of my children and my whole host of associates and friends and the family that was here, which was on her side, mother of my children's side. And she got off the elevator, and she said, where's my baby? And the mother of my children said, he's been gone all day. I'm sorry, he's been gone all day. And my mom was collapsed, as you would think, believe what happened. And they had to get her together and they came to my room. And when she came to my room, I was hooked up to all these tubes and everything. And the doctors proceeded to tell them that to go ahead and just turn the machine off so they can officially call it. And the reason they didn't do it so fast, because they gave them the benefit to come up there to be with me in my last moments. So they were about to do it. And my daughter, who was 18, she had just turned 18. She said, don't, not yet. And they said, he's been gone the entire day. There's nothing we can do. He's already gone. She said, no, he's still in there. I don't care. He's still in there. She said, just wait one extra day. So they waited. They went to the house, started packing up my home, started making memorial plans. my job had drafted up the condolences letter already, ready for my family. I still have that condolences letter that was sent to my family saying that we were notified the death of your loved one. I still have that letter. And the family was just clearing out the house until the next morning, the 19th. The doctors called them and said, "You won't believe this. Come back to the hospital." And we found a faint pulse. So they were excited and elated at the same time and surprised, as well as the doctors. So when they rushed back up to the doctors said that even though we found a faint pulse, we don't know what his quality of life is going to be because he had been deceased for an entire day, brain without oxygen and everything. So they said, "We don't care. Keep him on." So it kept me on for my organs to come back, had me in a medically induced coma, my organs to come back. And while that in that coma, I suffered 26 strokes throughout multiple parts of my brain. They waited for me to get together, came back, of course. And that was when, like I said, when I woke up and I started seeing family and everything. Some people ask me, "What did you see? Do you remember anything?" And, you know, I always say that, you know, I did not know that I was deceased. I didn't know. I thought maybe, I want to say maybe I had just was asleep or something. You know, I had no idea. But while I was out, I remember going down this tunnel. And this tunnel was like amber. And it was like, you know, circular all around, like a tunnel, you know, just circle all around, tunnel, duh. And there were people reaching up and reaching around. And I wasn't afraid or scared or anything, but they were just reaching up or reaching out to me. And I just noticed it and witnessed it and just kept going. By the time I got to the end of the tunnel, I found myself floating down the highway. And it was gloomy and misty and like dark outside. And it's just so ironic that it was like that, because when it happened, it was dark outside. So I was floating down the highway. I passed a couple of landmarks here in Columbus. And then it was like almost all of a sudden, it was just like instant. I was up in space. Nobody, no fear, no anger, no doubt, no worry, no emotions. I just existed. I knew that I was part of everything. You know, I was just observing. And towards my footstool, I want to say towards the front of me, but down, I saw an Earth-like planet. I don't know if it was Earth. I always say it's Earth, but when I think about it, I'm like, I don't know. But it was Earth-like planet with energy protruding from it. And it looked like energy in a form of like a tree. You could see the energy coming out of the Earth throughout this tree and going back and down, like circulating in and out of this tree through the top. Not going around like this, but it was just going up and down, circulating through the top. I saw it from afar, and then I looked to my left and I saw like this galaxy or this swirl of stars that I thought was more like a wormhole or something. But years later, I come to find out, I was just scrolling through the internet and come to find out, like, wait a minute, I saw this. This is what I saw. And I found out it was the Andromeda Galaxy. So I saw these stars through this wormhole, which was the Andromeda Galaxy, and I looked at the Earth, or the planet, and I was just looking back and forth at both of them, just observing, and I heard someone call my name, like to the right. I looked, just darkness, didn't see anybody, didn't observe anybody, but I heard someone call my name, and I found myself looking over again, and then looking at the planet again. And then just looking toward the darkness again, hearing my name being called. And after that, just darkness. Don't remember anything else while I was out. But when I came to, I would say it was the best. This may sound morbid. It was the best rest I ever had in my life. You know, I was rested. I was clear conscious, clear headed. I just there, you know, wasn't worried about pain or anything. I was just there. And the girl who I had just started dating in December of 2015, she was there right by my side, as well as my kid's auntie. But the girl was there, still there. And she found out was because when she works at the same hospital, when she just got home from work that morning, and my son called her and said, dad died. And she rushed right back up to the hospital. And she was there the whole time, you know, she never left. And one day she was just standing by my bed. And like I said, I was clear. I was fresh, pure, unadulterated mind, spirit, new, anew. But I looked over and she was holding my hand. I looked over at her and a tear started coming down my eye. And I looked back in front of me. And then I looked back up at her. And then I moved my mouth, even though I couldn't talk because of the trach and everything. And I asked her, will she marry me? She said yes. She cried. She said yes. So I was engaged in the hospital, halfway incapacitated. But as I'm going and getting the visitors from the hospital, from family, my mom kept coming back up like every weekend to see me, taking care of all my things and whatnot. I was in my bed and I heard the therapist was coming in and said, okay, you ready for your therapy? It's my first time doing therapy. They said, so are you ready? And I'm like, what do I need therapy for? You know, think anything of it. And I proceeded to try to get up and move my legs over, and it was kind of heavy. Couldn't find out I couldn't walk anymore. So the therapy was for me regrouping. I actually had to relearn how to walk. I had to relearn how to talk. I had to relearn how to write certain cognitive skills. I had to relearn a whole bunch of things. I did my therapy, started off with just sliding, you know, the steps. Afterwards, I got out the hospital probably a month later, month and a half, 2 months later. And when I got out the hospital, it was like looking at the sky and I looking at everything like I had seen everything for the first time. Nothing looked familiar. It was like a newborn baby. I was new to everything, every emotion. Every physical thing, I was new. I also found out that the hard way that my life didn't just restart over spiritually and emotionally and mentally. It started over economically as well, because of my now handicap, I lost my job that I held for over nearly 20 years. And I lost my home. I had to start over. I had to relearn to drive. I had to get used to not using certain, my left side of my body towards my, I want to say from my knee all the way down. I developed neuropathy, traumatic brain injury from the strokes. I have vertigo, still have my lupus. It didn't go anywhere. I still have my asthma and my allergies, but I keep pushing, you know, and I stay optimistic for my future. Regardless of everything that I've been through and everything that I experienced, I'm grateful for my experiences. It brought me closer to understanding who I am, brought me closer to understanding the purpose and the real meaning of love, that it's not a word. It's an actual entity. It lives. It lives in all spaces, all realms at the same time. It's part of the Creator. I understand it more, understand it better. I understand some of the things that was said by the Messiah when he said, I love thy enemy. Or when God said, how can you hate your brother who you see every day, but hate me who you've never seen? I understand all these things so clear. And I try to share this with people, and people, it's hard for people to grasp some of these things based off of emotion. The reason it's hard for them to grasp some of these things. But I regret nothing. I am humbled. I am grateful. And I am blessed to still be here on this earth to not just share my story with others, but to share inspiration and perseverance. And for some, hopefully, understanding some of the spectrums of love and unconditional love. I started a business in 2019 to help people. It's called Daleth Aromatherapy. Daleth Aromatherapy and Meditation Sanctuary to help people experience the joys of meditation through meditation and aromatherapy. It is now a website. I wanted to do a physical location, but right now it's a website. And it's a website that's designed to help people find what they need in this avenue. I wrote a book in 2018, self-published via Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble. It's called The Second Time Around, a memoir about a life, a death, and a second chance. So I've been busy. I've been trying to keep myself busy and occupied throughout this whole process, which also included me getting actually married and having another child. I know at 46, I have a 3-year-old now, and it's like this is all part of starting over. I welcome it. I'm, again, humbled by it. I'm grateful, and I have no doubts, and I'm very optimistic my future for me and my family will get brighter, regardless of everything. I'm still here, and I'm grateful. Thank you for hearing my story. Thank you for sitting with me. I pray you all the best in all your endeavors, and pray you all find what you're looking for. And Psalm, my hope is peace and understanding in your life goals and in your paths. Thank you again.